morning, marketers. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Morning Wake Up Podcast, live from Advertising Week New York 2024 and brought to you by Kantar and Reddit. Today is Wednesday, October the 9th, the third day of Advertising Week. We're a little over halfway here at the Penn District in New York City, but I think the best is yet to come, or at least I hope it is. Here today to discuss today's trends, topics, and insights, well, actually the week's topics, trends, and insights, is Kantar's Carrie Benson. Carrie, how you doing?
Good, great. Good to see you. Great
to be here. Good to see you. So before we dive into some of the hot topics we're expecting to hear about today and probably for the remainder of the week, I'm curious to know what some of your interests are, both personally and at Kantar. What trends and topics are you particularly keen on this year at Advertising Week?
Where do I start? So there's so much going on, but I love the topics about creative, and what we're seeing this week is just there's so much fragmentation, so many different ways to reach audiences, and the implications that has on creative is pushing the way we develop and think about what creative is and what content is today and how to get brand messages across. I think it's really evolving.
When it comes to you personally, when you hear all of these voices telling you all of these different things, how do you make sense of it all?
I think you need to make connections. I know it sounds really nerdy, but there's so many great topics here. There's so many things to learn. But you really have, there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
So you really have to walk away and say, okay, what do I want to take from that? And then how does that maybe connect to this? So in the most rudimentary way, but it's, if I'm here from a, I work with the creative and just developing content and making sure that it works really well for our clients. I'm looking at creative messaging and how creative is living in the different channels and how creative is living against certain audiences and what is creative today. Obviously, we talk a lot about the 30-second spot, but really that's not the lead creative tool anymore. It's usually a video, but what format is the video in and where is it being seen and who's delivering it? It could be creator content, it could be influencer content, it could be embedded product, it could be just the brand's part of a story and piece of entertainment, or it could be a 6-second, 15-second, or 30-second video as well. So there's all this coming together, and I find that it's pretty challenging for advertisers today to figure out, and agencies to figure out, what's the best way to kind of build the storyline across all these different fragmented channels in which we're trying to reach the audience.
Definitely. I keep hearing the word touch points, which is a great word, but it also implies that there's, in my mind anyway, it implies that creative can reach across 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 6 seconds, print, digital banner ads, out of home. And I don't believe that to always be the case. Not everything translates like that. And sometimes it feels in my mind that, maybe you shouldn't even try. That the thing that might be funny in 6 seconds is tedious at 30 seconds or does not translate at all to a static image. But yet here we are with a lot of brands really trying that. I always wonder, and I wonder if you have input on this, do you feel that that might be a result of just, I don't want to call it laziness, but just a sort of a poor practice of trying to kind of fit a square peg into a round hole? Just this idea that, we had this great idea and we know we have to be in all these places. Let's make it work.
Right. So you can kind of oversimplify it a little bit. And at Kantar, we talk about the message just needs to make sure that you're portraying the brand in a meaningful and different way. Mm-hmm. And a brand or its products, a lot of times have meaningful and difference baked in, but a lot of products don't.
Yeah.
And because they're commodity products or services. So, but if you think about just trying to stand out, like every single piece of creative is trying to build a certain brand memory, but not all brand memories are created the same, and they shouldn't be. Some brand memories are designed to really strike an emotional chord so you remember it longer, and other brand memories are just like, hey, a reminder, buy me tomorrow. So I think when you think about the ecosystem in which campaigns are developed for today, not every ad has to, and not every piece of creative has to do the same thing. They need to work with each other. But if you can try, if advertisers can try to remember, well, how does this stand out? How does this differentiate the brand? Maybe it's the music that they use,
yeah,
you know, in audio. Or maybe, I haven't seen a great, fantastic, I mean, no one talks about print. We all talk about video, including me a lot. But I saw the most amazing print ad from Tiffany in the newspaper, which I never even read anymore. It's in the New York Times, back page of a section. And it was just poetry that was all about love. And Tiffany could really, it was beautiful copy that if you took the time to read it, it was just all copy on Tiffany Blue. And it was just a nice little poem about love and how special that is and how lucky we all are to be able to share love with somebody else.
That's fantastic. And something that probably wouldn't really work in a video form when you really stop and think about it. Because, I mean, I guess you could have it sort of, you know, gently, you know, word by word fade in or something like that. But would people have the patience for it in that sort of medium?
Right, exactly.
Interesting. You know, when you said music, one of the things I always think of, especially when it comes to that sort of, you know, the brand sort of memory thing you were talking about, I always instantly go back to the iPod commercials of old, you know, that silhouette of the dancer with all the flashy colors. For whatever reason, my brain always goes back to that as being the, you know, I remember the display ads, I remember the TV commercials, I remember the, you know, the animated stuff on websites and all of that as still. And I wonder, was it because of the visuals? Was it because of the music? Or was it because the product was so great? And I still to this day have no idea. But when I think of what was the perfect, in my mind, what was the perfect multi-touch point campaign, I still go all the way back there.
I love that example. It's a, you know, we tend to remember things that somehow become iconographic,
yeah,
right? And what Apple managed to do in that TV spot was create a feeling you get when you're wearing iPods.
Yeah.
And to do that in a 30-second spot, super hard.
Yeah.
Especially at that time when they did it. It was very innovative. And they use music, which is very powerful, and to tap into a certain type of feeling. And they really captured it through the movement and the dancing and the silhouettes and the way you could put yourself into that position. Not an easy thing to do, which is why you remember. It was so good.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're talking a little bit about TV, and we're definitely talking about fragmentation. And with all of that, we kind of get to one of the themes of the day is going to be streaming. And I don't think, I probably shouldn't be talking about fragmentation because that really sounds like a negative thing. But I think I'd be remiss not to mention it because it's a very fragmented world, streaming is. You know, you can stream sports. You know, everybody talks about, you know, what is the real need for live TV still is live sports. It's this thing that everybody watches, everybody participates in, whatever that sport might be, baseball, basketball, particularly football. We'll get to the Super Bowl and NFL here in a moment. But you can stream games on DirecTV, Fubo TV, Hulu Plus Live TV, YouTube TV, all of these different places. And if you're not there, say you're a fan of Major League Soccer, as I am, Apple TV, you know, the list is, and then, you know, NHL has their own thing, MLB has their own thing, NFL has their own thing. There's so many options that my mind is blown just thinking about it. I'm actually surprised I wasn't able to list that many.
You know, that is so true. So, right, think about the streaming market. It's still relatively immature.
Yeah.
And we actually just did, I was just looking at a study yesterday that we did. We have a lot of brand data through our BrandZ database at Kantar. And I was actually just looking at the streaming category yesterday. And if you plot, if we take all the BrandZ data, which is, you know, the brand strength, brand power, brand positioning and all that stuff, and memorability and recall and awareness, you take all that together and you plot the streamers on a meaningful on the vertical axis and different on the vertical axis, meaningful on the bottom axis. Now, I don't mean to like nerd out on like, you know, visualizing a plot. But you see, Netflix and Amazon are super strong. They've been around for a while. They've been streaming for a while. They're really good at it. People buy into paying a subscription for either and are open to seeing ads on the platforms now. Then you have the messy middle. And the messy middle is all these brands that are really trying very, very hard to get wallet share because there's only, like, what's the average amount of streaming services that you buy? You probably buy a lot.
I'm probably up to six at this point, six or seven.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you've got, okay, there's Hulu, which has been around. So they're a little bit more, they're a little bit more stronger, they're a little bit more differentiated. They've figured out how to differentiate themselves. Then you've got Disney Plus, you've got Paramount Plus, you've got Peacock, you've got, you know, ESPN, you've got all these different streaming services. And some of them aren't that differentiated from one another.
Yeah.
That's where they're real. You're really seeing like start these streaming services start to really kind of duke it out because there's a lot at stake. You know, they're either going to grow, or they're going to merge, or they're going to go away because there's only so many streaming services. You know, people are willing to pay for.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just wonder. I'm even more fascinated by when I turn on. I pull up Amazon Prime Video and I actually see Paramount Plus programming within that. So, you know, I can either opt to pay for Paramount outside of Amazon or I can pay for it within Amazon. Or, you know, don't even get me started on the whole HBO Go Now Max, whatever it is tomorrow thing. And, you know, it's not even that the options are so plentiful and the programming so plentiful. It's the changes have been so plentiful along the way that as a consumer, it's just, you know, sure, you're spoiled for choice, but you're also confused as hell. I mean, mm-hmm. like, it's just bizarre how far it's come in such a short span of time.
Right.
You know, and when you're trying to get consumers to adopt this new way of thinking, I cut the cord years ago, way too early, and have been suffering for it ever since. I, you know, fully admit it. But, you know, when you're trying to get consumers to adopt this new line of thinking and new models to, you know, sort of subscription models and pay models and ad-supported models, giving them this much choice seems like a very dangerous thing to do in a way, because when you confuse them this much, this soon, you're just asking for, you know, problems, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. But they're all fighting for programming, right? So think about what the NFL is doing. And you can watch NFL games now on Amazon, but you need to, you know, stream Amazon Prime on Thursday nights. And you've got YouTube, you know, Sunday Ticket, and you've got, you know, I think Apple Apple just bought into NFL programming as well. So there's games pretty much on all week long now.
Yeah.
And you can't just turn on broadcast TV and watch it on three different channels or four different channels. You really have to buy into streaming services if you really want to tap into the full breadth of games that are available today.
Well, all of which culminates in, you know, the big game. Which is still the big game. Doesn't matter what sport you follow, the Super Bowl is still, you know, the crown king of all sports pretty much everywhere, at least in the United States anyway. Lots of things have changed with that over the years as well. But one of my favorite things that I wanted to talk about, just touch on really quick, is Nickelodeon is going to host a slime-filled, family-friendly version of the Super Bowl. I don't know why I want to mention that. I just think that's a fun thing to talk about.
Yeah, I think we did it last year.
Yeah, I missed it. I didn't know this was a recurring thing, so I'm pretty excited to watch that. I haven't really thought about Nickelodeon in quite some time. It was one of those things that, as a cord cutter, you kind of miss it because I didn't have... You know, my daughter was of Nickelodeon age. We really didn't have streaming regular channel TV, and then got it after she was already past that age. So now that we have it again, I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, lots of happenings around that. And I think when it comes to the importance of the Super Bowl to advertisers, we still hear a lot about how important it is. How important at Kantar do you think it still is? I mean, is this still the big flagship moment that it always has been? And do you think it will remain so in the future?
Yeah, we've done a lot of work analyzing the impact that Super Bowl has and what it kind of means today. It's bigger than ever. So every year, I mean, maybe, you know, last year it reached 124 million through a combination of CBS and Nickelodeon. And this year... it's probably going to be more. The audience is going to continue to grow. It's becoming more of a global audience as well. But it's not really... Here's what's great about the Super Bowl. Here's what makes it special. It's not just a big game. It's an experience. It's an entertainment event. You know, some people... We know a lot of people tune in for the ads. A lot of people are watching the game. It's a social occasion. They get together with their friends. You can stream. You can... Everyone's got a bet on the game. You know, just mass audience, you know, betting in a fun way. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, you know, just an amazing amount of social that comes along with that. Checking in on what everyone is talking about from a player standpoint. Everyone, you know, I'll back up for a second. Sports itself is highly entertaining and attracts a lot of audiences and fandom. The Super Bowl, by the time everyone tunes in, everyone knows about the players, the history, the record. It doesn't take much to kind of learn up on what's going on with this team. Fantasy football makes it, people are familiar with the different players. So it's just a huge event. And advertising on it, you know, we all talk about the 30-second TV, and I was talking about this earlier this week. It's not just about the 30-second spot. It's about the campaign that goes behind it and the digital and all the socials that come along with it and the experiences that a brand wants to build using the Super Bowl as a platform.
We also have, Univision is going to be broadcasting the entire Super Bowl game in Spanish. I don't know if that's something they've been doing this whole time.
They did that last year.
Yep. And then, you know, we have games, you know, taking place in the UK. We have games taking place in Mexico, all over the place. It makes football a far more global sport, as you said. I also think it, for a football fan, it makes it a little bit more of a challenge to follow some of the teams at times when you have these games on at really strange times. And, you know, you could bet that your team was going to be on, you know, maybe short of a Monday night football game in a bye week, you could plan on them being on, you know, hey, it's going to be Sunday. It's going to be 10 a.m. or 1 p.m. depending upon where you live.
Right.
And that was that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was easy. But, you know, fast forward to today, it's a little more of a challenge, but, you know, it is what it is. You had mentioned fandom, and I want to kind of dive into something else that has fandom attached to it, probably at least as much, perhaps even more so fandom than sports do, and something that will be discussed today at Advertising Week, gaming, which I think when I started with Advertising Week some 12, 13 years ago, gaming was a blip on the Advertising Week horizon. We were talking about it a little bit here and there. We had partners like Activision that would show up and tell us that gaming was going to be a big deal with advertisers. I don't know if anybody believed it, but they obviously knew the future. We did not. What is the Kantar view on gaming, just at high level, and then we can discuss from there?
I mean, gaming is also an experience, right? So the way that you want to connect with gamers is, you know, really dependent on the format in which, you know, the game is being played. So it is a different way. It goes back to what are the options for a brand to reach audiences today? And gaming is a big option. So, you know, but it also then the question comes up is, do you want to disrupt the experience that the audience is having with whatever they're tuning into or social platforms or gaming, or do you want to organically fit in and integrate into it? And that really, a lot of that depends on what the brand's trying to do, but also the brand's respect for the integrity of the context in which it's being seen.
I'm reading actual Kantar data here. I'm cheating a little bit. According to this, there'll be 3.8 billion gamers by 2027. Up from 2.6 billion by 2019. I don't know what the global population is at this moment in time, but that's got to be, what, half or better, I want to say. That's a lot of gamers.
It's a lot of gamers.
And as somebody who's been playing video games on and off since I was a little kid, that pretty much, I think, means it's not just for the nerdy little kids sitting in their basements anymore. Would you say it's safe to assume that gaming is truly a cross-generational phenomenon at this point?
Oh, I would definitely say so. You know, think about, you've been gaming for a while now. I mean, it's not like it's a new thing, right? And, you know, kids love to game, and young people love to game, and it's social. And I think it definitely crosses generations. Whether it crosses genders as strongly, I'm not sure.
Interesting. I know that, you know, there was a lot of discussion, especially during quarantine, that people were socializing a lot by playing games. And it feels like a lot of that has sort of continued. I really didn't notice that because I had been doing it prior to that and actually kind of dropped off a little bit during that time, because for me that was like, well, I really need to, you know, kind of get out in the world a little bit whenever I can. So the idea of sitting here while everyone else is sitting here was not particularly appealing. When it comes to that sort of socialization through gaming, do you feel that there's opportunity for brands to be better organically reaching gamers through those particular channels? So I'm thinking of, like, a lot of gamers, for example, use things like Discord to communicate versus the, you know, the sort of platform-dependent PlayStation networks or Xbox networks, that, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to reach consumers wherever they happen to be, right? And so it's just a matter of how, what type of, again, it goes back to what I was talking about before, which is not every ad is created equal, right? You know, what do you want to get? What do you want that connection to achieve?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And in terms of the platform part of it, there's this whole, you know, again, fragmentation. You have console gaming, PC gaming, and I think above all of those, you have mobile gaming, which, you know, you had mentioned the sort of gender divide there a little bit. I think mobile gaming, if I may be mistaken with this, but I do believe mobile gaming is where you find the largest segment of females playing, to, you know, as opposed to men. Do you feel that that is something that will likely increase, or is there any data that you're aware of that would explain why that is? Is it more a more inclusive environment, or is it just the nature of the platform?
I think it's the nature of the platform, but also I think it's the nature of the types of games that you can find that are easier to play on a mobile device versus some of the, you know, PlayStation and Xbox, and just the level of interactivity and the screen size that you want to be able to play that game on.
So I prefer my games really stupid and complicated, is what you
think. Hey, look, as long as you're having fun.
I don't know. I mean, I Candy Crush like the best of them. Well, I Candy Crush like the worst of them, but I still Candy Crush. I attempt to Candy Crush. I make no...
Do you Candy Crush on a large screen?
No. Candy Crush on a large screen would probably make me depressed because I'm so bad at Candy Crush that if I saw it big, it would just, like, make me sad. It's funny, too, because going into Candy Crush, total aside, Candy Crush, I used to wonder, how is this monetized? How are they actually making money off this? And I realized one day, well, you know, they're selling these tokens to let you continue, otherwise you have to wait. And I thought, no, I'm never doing that. And then you realize, well, this really is a thing, you know.
Yeah.
I really do need to keep going. And you realize, you know, $30 later that, no, this is definitely how fortunes are made. And, you know, there's ads in there, of course. So when thinking of sort of the combination of gaming and real life events, so we have Green Day headlining the EA Sports Super Bowl party, the Madden Bowl. Is that something you think we're going to see more things like that in the coming days? Or coming years, I should say. Days is kind of foolish. In the coming years, I mean, is that... I'm very intrigued by this sort of thing because, you know, I remember, you know, Fortnite concerts have become a thing that is so commonplace now that people just treat it like, yeah, you know, what did you do last Tuesday? Well, I saw a concert. Where was the concert? Well, it was in Fortnite. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. How was it? You know, nobody even thinks about it. If you're a certain age or under, you know, I went to a concert in Brooklyn last night and, you know, that was great. But other people will have seen a concert in Roblox and to them, it's the same thing. And to me, you know, in my particular age demographic, I try and be very open-minded about this stuff, but you kind of go, wait, you did what? But this is a more and more commonplace thing. I'm very curious, what's your feelings on this? And from, you know, what is the opportunity for brands when it comes to these things?
I think that, we're seeing some new data come in about how important music is to Gen Z. And so music is important to all of us. You know, obviously music plays a role in all of our lives. But Gen Z, I think, you know, they're more likely to be entertained, gaming, but also why not watch music? You know, and so if you can have some type of experience, it depends on how the experience is delivered in order for, like, how you're going to build that audience. And we have so much technology now that... how will the gaming experience itself becomes more multi-dimensional, or the experience of watching a music? Look at Taylor Swift and her, you know, she took the Eras Tour on, you know, TV.
Yeah.
And the tune in for that was, if you didn't make it to a concert or if you want to see her again, you know, okay, watching that Eras Tour through your big screen wasn't a bad experience at all. Same thing with the way that you're going to experience Green Day, you know, through the the different channels.
I feel like I'm so out of touch. I wonder at any given time, all the time, if the Eras Tour is still going. I truly don't know. Like, it feels like it's gone on for about 3 years.
I have to imagine, yes, it must be.
We're in the era of the Eras Tour.
We are in era, yes. I don't know which leg we're on.
Yeah, I'm going to get emails for this going, what are you, an idiot? yes, I am. When it comes to Taylor Swift, I actually am. I love Taylor Swift, don't get me wrong, but I don't know when this tour started or if it ended.
It's still going on. I think she may be in South America. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. And how
she was
are we
just in
to?
Europe, so she's somewhere else now.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's funny. There's not a news day that goes by where there's not, you know, at least 7 articles on my Apple News feed that don't involve Taylor Swift in some way, shape, or form, even tangentially. You know, it's just like she's never away, which, credit to her. I'm sure that's, you know, just from a branding perspective, she is a perfect case study for how to market to people in 2024 and beyond. Kind of an extension of this, you know, taking the sort of gaming side of this and the streaming side of this, I'd like to talk a little bit about the other side of streaming. So Twitch, live YouTube, and then, you know, regular YouTube, you know, influencers, people of that nature. What sort of trends do you at Kantar see happening with that? Any sort of changes or miraculous happenings that might be coming our way anytime soon with those things? It feels like a lot of that was like a real big deal for a while there and has just also kind of become the norm for us. You know, that, you know, if you're into watching somebody do something live, be it play a game or, you know, my favorite cooking shows or live DJing or discussing politics or, you know, there's a bunch of guys that all they do is talk about crypto all day for whatever reason. People watch that. That's not my thing, but, you know, to each their own.
Right, right.
You know, but it's so commonplace now that it's its own thing. It's there if you want it. You know, you get on there and there's 35,000 people watching, you know, somebody make cookies and that's great. But again, it feels like it had its moment, but it doesn't feel like it's really had its advertising moment, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
And I'm not sure why that is, you know. I mean, it's definitely had its advertising week moment.
Well, I think, again, going back to, there's so many options.
Yeah.
Right? There's so many options to learn about something new. You think about a recipe and watching somebody bake cookies. The ads will pop up for the ingredients that are going into those cookies.
Yeah.
Could be Toll House, you know, chocolate chips, or it could be, you know, the certain type of flour. There's also, because recipes are, you know, sometimes you stink at it, you know, like especially baking. There's so much, like, there's science in baking, right? So then you've got all the comments of the people that are trying to do the same thing, but they substituted this gluten-free flour for this instead, and here's how it came out, and don't do this, whatever. So whether you're watching it live or whether you're kind of just going on and trying to go deep, you know, it's a pretty powerful way to learn and learn about something you're interested in. You can basically learn about anything, anywhere. And videos are going to bring that to life, and live experiences are going to bring that to life in a way that, you know, you don't need to get in your car and drive to a certain test kitchen and, you know, buy a ticket and, you know, whatever. I mean, that's still really fun too. But there's ways to really become an expert on things that you want, that you're interested in.
Yeah, it feels like all the world's education now is really just on YouTube. Right down to, I mean, if you want to change the brakes on your 1981 Chevy Nova, I mean, some guy's done it, and he'll show you how to do it.
That's so true. I had like a flap problem underneath my car, and I was like, how did that happen? And some guy changed the oil on it and decided not to do it properly, and he cut a hole in the covering, like the undercovering of my car, and his little square hole, and then I'm like driving around with the square part just kind of flapping against the ground. I'm like, somebody's figured out how to fix this or what I can do about it. And certainly I did find that the answer to that. And
yeah. I mean, it's all there somewhere. Now, whether or not it's accurate or not, which, you know,
well,
goes back to
duct tape.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah, totally. And you go back to these Twitch shows. It's like, just because this guy's baking cookies doesn't mean they're good. I'll never know.
Right.
You know, I mean, I could follow the recipe and find out, oh, this guy has no idea what he's doing. I'd like to think he knows what he's doing. They look good, but that doesn't mean anything.
I mean, I would go back to, like, okay, so the quality of content.
Yeah.
You know? there's a lot of crap out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so from an advertiser standpoint, how do you make sure that you're around good content? Right. But also just, you know, consumers being like, who are the curators of content? You know, and consumers are going to be drawn to the best curators. So that almost either also goes back to the streaming wars right now. I hate to say that cliche term, but, you know, it's all about the content and the type of content you want to tune into.
Well, there's also this prediction, too, with all these streaming platforms that eventually, and it's funny, depending upon who I talk to, there's different predictions as to who's going to buy who, but there's this idea that, you know, in a few years, there's only going to be three.
Right.
And this one's going to buy this one, and these guys are going to buy these guys, and Apple's going to buy this one, and this one. And you're kind of sitting here going, yeah, maybe. Or maybe these four will just fall off the map, and we'll lose access to all this programming, and that'll be that. You know, I don't really see Apple buying anything. Why would they? You know, but, you know, I've been wrong before, and well, I'll be wrong again. I don't even know when Taylor Swift tours, so, you know, it's not a safe bet for, you know, to be listening to me in the first place. But, yeah, I think, is there anything you're looking forward to today, the rest of the day at Advertising Week?
And yeah, I think, so there's so many different sessions, and now that we're three days in, I think it's like, okay, going back to, all right, what are the themes that we're really starting to pull out? What are the connections? What's going to stick? How can we take this and build on this knowledge that we get from Advertising Week and the people that we're meeting and the new ways of working?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's fair. Carrie, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show today. This was fantastic.
Great. Thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow. At what I guess 9:30 live. We were a little late today,
yeah,
but that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, it's live, but you know, it's Advertising Week. You can't be expected to, you know, if the stages are on time. I probably shouldn't say that. The stages are always on time. You know, there's never an exception. But I'll be back tomorrow with Ryan Brendel of Reddit, where we're going to do a special segment called Recap with Ryan, where Ryan's going to go through. He's on the ground all week, apparently. Hopefully he's around here somewhere. And we're going to go over all the things Ryan saw and discuss all of Thursday's topics.